Why do people commit hate crimes? We talk about this now with a world-leading criminologist who explores the tipping point between prejudice and hate crime. A professor of criminology with over 20 years experience, delighted to welcome Matt Williams. Nice to have you on the show. And to be honest with you, this couldn't be a kind of a more now topic, even though it's something you didn't really write for Now. But the book is called The Science of Hate. And there's quite a bit of that going on right now, isn't there, Matt?
Yes, there is, unfortunately. It's a strange moment to be releasing the book. You're right. It seems like there's a lot of hate in the world at the moment, yeah. Unfortunately. But to be fair, I've been writing this book, for the last 3 years. And at each point in those 3 years, I've always thought to myself, this book would be great if it came out now. You know, I think that throughout this whole period of time, we've just seen an acceleration of hate beyond what we're all used to in our daily lives, if I'm honest.
Yeah, and you have your own personal reasons for being particularly interested in this subject. It's something that happened to you in your early 20s that sent you on this kind of scientific journey that you're on now, basically.
It did, yeah. So I guess the genesis of my whole career, in a way, began because of this incident I suffered back in the late 1990s. I just finished doing my undergraduate degree in sociology at Cardiff Uni and was celebrating with friends in London. And I stepped out of a bar and was jumped upon by three men. I hit the floor and essentially had a split lip. And as they left me, luckily there was no more damage than that, they actually used a homophobic slur. So it became very apparent in that moment that I was a victim of a hate crime myself. I was already planning to become a journalist, if I'm honest, at that point in time. I was going to do a master's in broadcast journalism.
Right.
And ultimately it changed my life because I just couldn't get out of my head the question, why would someone do that to me? What did they literally hate what I was? Yeah. Or were there other things going on in their minds that may explain that kind of behavior? So that led me to do a degree in criminology instead, then a PhD in criminology to understand the reasons behind why. And the book is a culmination of about 20 years of my research in the field. That was, you know, back in the late 1990s. And I just felt now was the right time to share what I had learned with the world. You know, my mother always asks me, what do you do for a living? You know, she doesn't really understand what a professor does. And, you know, it's very, I would never give one of my academic papers to read because they're just not very interesting. Mm. But I wanted to write something that someone like my mother, my grandparents, the general person on the street could read to gain a better understanding of why hate seems to be on the ascendance right now and what might be the reasons behind it.
Yes, and of course, the title of the book, The Science of Hate, very much implies that there is a lot of science behind that. And I guess the most obvious question would be, are our brains wired to hate? Is it inbuilt in some of us?
It's a really good question to ask, and it's something that the book really tackles early on, actually. So there are quite a few chapters that deal with what the brain does and how that brain can be implicated in some ways in hateful behavior. But the short answer to your question is no, we're not wired to hate. We learn to hate. But what we are wired to do through evolution is to prefer people like us, which is pretty benign when you think about it as kids in the playground. What does that mean, prefer people like us? It doesn't necessarily mean prefer white people or black people or heterosexual people. What it means is that we prefer people in the same group as us. And that group can be, you know, fans of Madonna versus fans of Britney Spears or whatever it might be. Yeah. You know, the group doesn't necessarily have to be cut down racial lines or lines of sexual orientation. It can be anything. And we have this weird evolved predisposition to like people like us. Now, that doesn't automatically turn into something bad, but it can be hijacked by the media, by biased parents, if you're being raised in a family environment that's quite biased or prejudiced, and by your peers, you know, the people you bother with in school and beyond that. If you're constantly being fed negative things about the out-group, we call them the out-group, we're the in-group, they're the out-group, whatever they might be. If you're constantly being fed negative things, the brain learns from that. And it's embedded in our brains in a way that is really, really hard to undo. And it's so hard to undo because it's so unconscious much of the time. And the book actually tells the reader we're all prejudiced, no matter how, if you want to use a popular term right now, how woke you might be, you are still prejudiced in ways that you don't fully understand, because our brains are like sponges. When we're growing up as kids, we literally just absorb it, and you can't turn off that tap. You know, it's kind of like a flow of information coming into your brain, and your brain is so thirsty when you're young that ultimately you can't stop it. And so whatever being exposed to, your brain learns from, and ultimately they are those memories, those thought processes, those stereotypes that we associate with other groups eventually come out in ways that we don't fully expect. And they sometimes can be prejudiced. It can be in terms of discrimination. You might give a larger tip to a person that's more like you than the person that's not more like you. You may even give the person the job that's more like you than the person that's not like you without fully realizing that you've done that. But at the more extreme end, when all that learning, et cetera, is then in some ways hijacked even further, what I call those in the book are accelerants, and I can talk about those, you get hate crime at the end of that. And at the extreme end of the spectrum, terrorism, which is obviously the one of the worst outcomes we can have.
I think we probably all remember being at school and saying, oh, I hate that boy. I don't like him very much, you know, and we use the word kind of glibly. When do we transform from just using hate as a word to actually really seriously hating somebody and doing something about it?
That's a really, really good question. So basically, we do throw the word hate around quite casually, don't we? You know, my nephew Niall would say, I hate my vegetables.
Yes,
you know,
and I'm like,
you don't hate your vegetables now. And eventually, when he grows up, he'll start to enjoy his vegetables. You know, you can even hate an individual for something they've done to you, maybe. But very often, that emotion is transient. It kind of has a limit. It ends up stopping. You end up forgiving in some circumstances. What this book deals with is something called group hate. So you hate a person because of a group they belong to, which is very different from saying something like, I hate vegetables or I hate so-and-so in the playground. And it's because of the group and the characteristics of the group that you have this very strong attitude towards an individual and the group they belong to. And this is the important distinction. Hate is more than just an emotion. I mean, emotion can be fleeting. You can wake up in the morning and feel depressed or anxious, and after a cup of coffee and a donut, you're on top of the world. Mm. And ultimately, you know, hate isn't like that. Hate is more enduring. It's more long lasting. And for those that do genuinely hate, and they unfortunately do exist out there, it's more of an enduring attitude. And in some cases, some would argue it's more like an attitude than an emotion. It has a moral dimension sometimes. You feel morally, I guess, wedded to it in a way. So there's something that the outgroup you think are doing that challenges your worldview. And that's why it's so sustained over time.
Mm. And right now, as we see ourselves in this kind of digital social media world, I would imagine that somebody like you would look at that and say, well, I can see that this is one of these accelerants, must be social media, because the amount of hate that's spewed on social media by keyboard warriors, to call them, you know, by their rightful name, it is extraordinary.
Yes, I mean the book actually deals with this in a significant way. Ultimately, you cannot think about hate today in contemporary society without thinking about the role of social media.
Yeah.
I've been asked several times now, the why is it so bad now? It seems, you know, in our lifetimes, that it just seems for some reason to be much more divisive out there, much more polarizing.
Yeah.
And through all the analysis I've done, I've read thousands of research papers on why we are prejudiced, why we hate. And the one thing that I keep coming back to as to why it seems so much worse now, it is social media. The social media is an interesting phenomenon, really, because people go onto social media thinking there are no consequences to what they might say. And unfortunately, they're not wrong. currently, for example, the police only really get involved in a minority of cases of hate speech online, primarily because most of it doesn't reach what they call the criminal threshold. It's more insulting or abusive, and it's not grossly offensive, which is where the criminal threshold is. So you might call up the police and say, hey, I've just seen this comment, or I've been attacked by this person. And they might come back to you and say, well, unfortunately, that's not a crime. So we might need to think about how the law can change to change that threshold slightly, to bring it down a little bit without, and I stress this, without infringing on freedom of expression, of course, which is an important right that we must all uphold.
Is online bullying, which is a very common thing, is that a hate crime?
Well, I've always thought that elements of bullying could be hateful. So obviously children will, and you know, and young adults as well, will target other individuals because of a characteristic they might have, be that their ethnicity, their sexual orientation, and so on. I mean, as a gay man myself, I fully appreciate how difficult it can be for young kids going through that kind of uncertain stage in their life. And if they do come out in school, usually they're in for a lot of bullying, which is a depressing fact of life currently. And, you know, it can lead to the worst kinds of consequences all the way through to teen suicide, which is much higher for young gay men than it is for heterosexual men. So, yes, elements of bullying are hateful.
Is there any premeditative component to hate crime? I mean, for example, you mention people who are anti-gay bashers, for want of a better expression, would sometimes commute really long distances to pursue their victims. So they've clearly thought this through. Is that a common thing for hate crime?
Basically, the book distinguishes between what we call push and pull behaviors. So I guess the average prejudiced person will push people that they don't like away from them. You will avoid certain venues. You'll avoid certain sort of areas of the city or town or village in which you live, because you know that it might be frequented by people that you're prejudiced against.
Right.
Hate is different. Hate is all about pulling people towards you. So there's a tipping point between prejudice and hate where it goes from a pushing away behavior to a pulling towards you. And that's when you start seeking out the individuals that you supposedly hate to attack them. Right. And, you know, ultimately what the extreme extent of this is, of course, genocide, where you seek to exterminate a whole group of people. And we've seen that in Myanmar, in the Rohingya genocide recently. It's in the press all the time currently. And ultimately, it's a very kind of active behavior. So these individuals go on a mission, if you like, to eradicate that person from their town, their city, or, you know, the extreme extent, their planet. But ultimately, you're right. There is a pattern of behavior for certain types of haters, and you can actually break them down. You've got the mission haters, the ones that are, you know, so far gone, if you like. There's not much chance of getting them back on the right side. And ultimately, they are kind of terrorists, if you're far right and you're ISIS-type terrorists, who make it their life's work to hate. They're full-time haters, if you like.
Yeah.
But the other types of haters are more part-time haters. They dip in and out of hate depending on the situation at large. So some of the other accelerants I talk about in the book are divisive events that actually allow people to release their prejudices for a temporary period. So, for example, Brexit was a releaser of prejudice. Trump was a releaser of prejudice. And the terror attacks in 2017 in the UK, for example, the string that we had, and the ones in France that we've seen, some in Spain, they are releases of prejudice. Prejudice kind of exists in us all just below the surface. And for some people, an event like a terror attack can galvanize and bolster those prejudices to such an extent that they flow over. And the lid is blown off, if you like, off their prejudices. And they either say something nasty on social media to people that share the same characteristics as the perpetrators of the terror attack, or they go onto the streets and shout things on public transport, or the worst, they beat them up and sometimes even murder them. So it's a different kind of hater that's activated by certain kinds of accelerants, such as events. And there's a third type, what I'd call the defensive haters. These are the ones that protect their territory, if you like. So if their territory is their town or their village or their street even, if someone moves in that's different from them, that they have prejudices against, they're activated by that, and they start a campaign of hateful behavior towards them in the attempt to ultimately remove them from the street or the town or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. So you've got different types of hate. It's not all the same. It's not all one type of hater. It's a very complicated topic, which is why I've written the book about it.
But absolutely, absolutely. Looking at event-based stuff, one of the things that we are told is a very good way to rule people is to divide them first. And we see examples of that in everyday life, divide and rule. If you look back at something like September the 11th, you know, it helped the American cause for everybody to suddenly start being suspicious of anybody, you know, who had Arabic connections. Is divide and rule something that brings out hate crime in people? We look at COVID-19. I've seen people who have put on social media, you know, I'm not going in a Chinese restaurant ever again because it's their fault that we're all locked in. That's a divide and rule thing, isn't it?
Absolutely. I call this the weaponization of hate, in a way. There is money to be made from hate.
Yeah.
There is power to be gained from hate. And unfortunately, we see it so much more today than we ever have. I'm not sure if it's because there's more of it around or we're more aware of it. But ultimately, politicians, those who are seeking to become politicians, but also nation states, I'll name Russia, for example, here, that go out of their way to sow division in societies in order to stoke fears and anxieties in the population. When you've got a fearful and anxious population, and as you said, a coronavirus has done this. We've also seen it with Brexit and the discussion about Europe and immigration and so on and so forth. When you stoke that fire, when you stir up the fear, you have a captive audience and you can start telling them whatever you want. And they usually believe you because a fearful individual is a very susceptible, vulnerable individual. Mm. So ultimately, yes, the tactic is well known in psychology. They use it in what they call psychological operations, if you like. And, you know, this comes from the Cold War. The CIA were doing this in Europe when they were trying to fend off the influence of Russia. And what they did was invest massively, for example, in telecommunications infrastructure. So the Eurovision telecommunications infrastructure was massively paid for by the CIA. They knew full well that telling Europe that Russia was bad in some way was a way to keep Europe on the American side. So this has got a long history, and what we're seeing at this end is this process on steroids, basically, unfortunately, with social media, as we said earlier on, being a massive catalyst for this kind of activity.
It could be said that those who hate silently are kind of okay in the world because it's part of the human psyche. But those who take it further are the dangerous ones. And if you look at something like the police in Bristol the other day, you know, it's been speculated that those weren't locals at all. They were people who wander around the country, you know, who are just going to hate on the police at any opportunity. Those are the dangerous ones. Can we recognize them? They're not mentally ill, I guess. Are they diagnosably schizophrenic or manic depressive, or do they just have a high level of aggression and antisocial behavior, these people?
Unfortunately, they're pretty normal people. They're not that different from me and you. When I was trying to understand the nature of my attackers, at the end of the book, I not that I want to spoil the ending, but I kind of comment on, you know, if my life had gone in a slightly different way, I could have been committing hate crimes instead of researching them. If I had been exposed to all these accelerants that I talk about in the book, it's very possible I could have been committing hate crimes. It's nothing innate, and there's nothing about a personality to speak of that forces someone into that state of hateful being. It's just a set of events that happens throughout a person's life that can do that. So I steer the reader away from thinking that there is something in us or something in certain people, I should say, that makes them hate. It's not. There's nothing peculiar about a hateful person, nothing at all. It's just what's happened to them throughout their lives that's shaped them in that way. You can look, and in the book, I go through several cases. I look at David Copeland, if you remember the 1999 nail bomber in London. Yeah. Some listeners might remember that. But also I go through lots of other cases of hateful murderers that shows that their lives weren't that different from the readers, actually. Wow. And it's just a few things that happened to them that resulted in this course of action for them. So it's the book turns all the science onto the reader and asks the reader to consider for themselves, you know, what prejudices do you have that you need to work on? Not that I'm saying every reader will become a hate crime perpetrator. Of course they won't. But we need to work on the prejudices that we have to ensure that, you know, that one in a thousand doesn't go on to commit a hate crime.
Yes. Fascinating. Finally, we've only got a couple of minutes left. Is there anything that we can do to help turn the tide, as this thing is at an all-time high now?
Yes, there is. There's a lot we can do, actually. At the end of the book, there's a chapter on the 7 steps to stop hate. Which I try to avoid talking about it like a self-help guide, but it kind of works in that way, actually. It really asks the reader to consider their own prejudices, as I said earlier on, their own stereotypes that they hold, to consider things like what filter bubbles they might be in on social media and whether or not they should be seeking out alternative viewpoints to get out of that filter bubble, which can be quite damaging. But ultimately, yes, there is a lot in there that tells the reader how we can avoid that cliff edge and that tipping point into more dangerous attitudes and emotions.
Right. Fascinating. We could talk for hours. It's been a pleasure to talk to you today, Matt. It's The Science of Hate, the book. Matthew Williams, we really appreciate your time on Let's Talk this morning.
Pleasure. Thank you.
All the best, Matt.